May it please the court?
Sure.
One of the fundamental requirements of the Dissolution of Marriage Act is that property divisions be fair. The trial court in this case unfairly divided the marital property by deferring division of the husband's lodger's pension plan for an indefinite period, by ignoring the expert evidence on the record of the true present value of that pension plan, and then failing to include the true value of the pension plan in the overall division of property, by failing to consider the factors that are enumerated in the division or the Dissolution of Marriage Act, which are supposed to ensure a fair division of property, and by ordering the appellant, Catherine Landwehr, to pay an equalization payment of nearly $200,000 to her husband. In this case, John and Kathy Landwehr were married for 23 years, and one of the assets that they accumulated during their marriage was John's pension plan. He is a city employee, so he is a participant in the local area government employee retirement system, which is known as LOGERS. That is a defined benefit plan, which means John didn't contribute to the plan, he doesn't contribute to the plan, but when he reaches a certain age and number of years of service, he may elect to begin receiving a monthly benefit from that plan. The trial court found that that plan did accrue, most of it, during the time that the two were married. And both parties at trial presented expert testimony as to the present value of the Logger's plan, and both parties advocated for an immediate division of the Logger's plan in the overall property division. The judge, though, in this case, decided to use more of a wait-and-see approach and said that once John begins receiving his benefit, if he ever begins receiving it, at that time he would be required to pay her each month a portion of the amount he receives. Now, generally in a dissolution case, we take care of pension plans through a qualified domestic relations order,
which is somewhat similar to what he did, because the quadro usually requires payment out at the time that the benefits are payable.
It can do that. It can allow for an immediate division, wherein the quadro is sent to the plan administrator. The plan administrator sets up a separate account that will be filled with that the marital portion, and the alternate payee can take that money right then. In this case, though, the problem that we have is that there is a statute, 70.695 RISMO, governing loggers, which says that quadros do not apply to loggers' plans. So, and neither does really any other legal process. It's not, you can't attach it, you can't assign it, you can't file an income withholding order against it. So this case is actually very different than if we had had a quadro, because all of the decision-making about when and if Catherine Landwehr is ever going to receive part of this marital asset rests on her ex-husband, John Landwehr. If he elects not to retire with the city, she won't receive a dime of this marital asset. And at trial, we heard testimony from experts that this could be valued as much as $216,000, and it wasn't included in the overall property division. Now,
what if he would die before he elected to retire?
He would not receive any benefits. But
what would she get?
She would get nothing, but she would have paid him more than $200,000 in equalization. Well, one of the important things to remember about these loggers plans, and actually any pension plan, is that they don't accrue on the last day that you work before you retire. It takes years for these to accrue. And so all those years that they were married that this asset was building, she had an interest in that. And if we leave it to him and say, well, if he retires in 10 years or if he makes it to retirement, then she gets her marital portion. You can see how unfair that is, that she bears all the risk by having to pay him now for a marital asset that she's not getting
credit
for.
And what is she paying now towards? The pension was calculated in some way so that she is paying in towards it? Or I thought it was not valued at all.
No.
So how is she actually paying money now that she would?
It's an asset that was acquired while they were married. It is a pension. It is a marital asset. And so during the time that they were married, the court calculated, I think there were only maybe 5 or 6 years that they weren't married, that he was working for the city, working toward being able to receive this benefit.
So I think you're saying by giving it zero value, She does not get any offset for that, and that's what causes her to have to pay the much higher equalization payment.
Correct.
And is that a different issue than whether it can be ordered to be divided later on, or whether you have two different arguments? I think one is that it was error to say it had zero present value because
yes.
there were two experts and they gave differing amounts, but neither gave zero. And the other is whether or not it's feasible to order a deferred payment and division where it's the ex-spouse who would have to be willing to pay rather than a pension plan.
Yes, Judge, and enforceability is a big issue here, and that's why it's so important that we look to the case of Joyner versus Joyner, which was decided by the Western District in 2015. The case has almost identical facts to this one. The order, the husband was a loggers participant. The court didn't hear evidence of the present value of the plan, but heard evidence of what the benefit would be, and so divided the benefit and said, yes, in the future, if he ever receives it, he can pay her. And what the Joyner court told us is, well, that's not a fair division. When this thing is capable of being valued right now and included in the overall division, that's what we have to do. Because, of course, one of the goals of the Dissolution of Marriage Act is we want to prevent the carryover of the animosity that has led to the divorce in the first place, and we want to sever unity of title among these people. We don't want them to have to go back to court to enforce this. Because of the special kind of plan that this loggers plan is, future litigation is practically guaranteed. One of the things that John Landowee could do if he wanted to is he could take a lump sum payment on the first day he's eligible to receive benefits. What happens to Kathy's marital interest if that happens? There's no provision for that.
And your argument is if present value were given and it were included as a marital asset and divided as a marital asset, then she would have no future interest in
yes.
the payments.
Yes, absolutely. Do it now. That's what the Dissolution of Marriage Act says we're supposed to do, and that's what the Joyner Court says that we must do.
And opposing counsel says that's also unfair because he runs the risk that he will die before he gets anything, and yet he will have been charged sort of part of the value of what he might never receive.
Well, one of the issues here is, you know, John Landowee chose this job. This is a job that doesn't have a traditional type of retirement plan. That's probably why he had another IRA that he was contributing to at the same time. But he took on the risk that he might never make it to retirement. The problem here is, we want to give both parties credit for the value of the plan that accrued while they were married. And so it's more fair to John Landowee for him to get for that to be included in the overall property division now than it is for my client to have to haul him back into court in 11 years because he took a lump sum payment.
Both of them knew when they were married that this loggers plan may or may not pay. That was a mutual endeavor. I mean, they both knew it may not pay.
Well, one of the things that the Joyner Court said, though, is that this is the best way to allocate the risk to both of them. Look, if he decides to leave, you know, that's his decision. If he decides to not make it, if he dies, I'm not trying to be flippant here, but what does he care? I mean, if he dies before he begins collecting the benefit, yes, he's not going to receive the benefit, but my client still will
pay
him. Pardon me?
Is he vested?
Well, he doesn't become eligible to receive the
money. There's a big difference between vested and eligible to receive.
Your brief indicates there's vesting but not maturity. Is that
well, I think the language that you're using, Judge Stith, is from the Kukta case, uh-huh. if I'm not mistaken. And unfortunately, the Kukta case doesn't address these types of defined benefit plans. So I think the analysis of vesting and maturing is not necessary.
The reason I ask that question is, does he have to be working for the city to draw retirement?
On the day that he becomes eligible, yes,
so
and elects to take it, then yes. He could continue working for the city and elect not to receive the benefit.
Right, but if he quits and goes to work for someone
right.
else, then he loses the pension.
Right. And actually, I would argue that he has every incentive not to collect the benefit if the judgment stands.
So he has no vested right now. If he quits, he has to be working there on the day he retires.
I think he has to be there on the day that he becomes eligible.
To retire. Otherwise, all those years mean nothing.
Well, yes. I mean, the situation here is somewhat different because in the Kukta case, they were dealing with not a defined benefit plan. And the court went through this long analysis about vested and matured benefits. And because we have joiner, we don't really have to go there. We have to say, look, we all recognize that a pension is a marital asset. It doesn't accrue on the last day before it begins being collected. And so each party should get the credit for the fact that they've built that asset during the marriage. It doesn't make sense for her to pay him $200,000. If he dies tomorrow and this judgment stands, she has to pay his estate $200,000 and gets no credit in the property.
You're saying in part it's within his control whether or not it has value or not.
It is. Okay. It is, and that's another reason that this isn't fair, and it's another reason that this judgment flies so far afield of the goals of the Dissolution of Marriage Act. We don't want these people to have to be tied together for another 11 or 12 years, and then every month for him to have to write her a check, and her to have to try to figure out some way to get him to write her the check, when we can do what both parties wanted done at the time of trial, which is divide it.
You only have a little bit of time left. There was a difference in evidence at the during trial as to the value of the pension. What error are you alleging the trial court erred in valuing it? If the trial court would value it at the value of husband's, is that error, or is that even before us since the trial court said zero?
Well, our position is that there was substantial evidence on the record to support a value between the value he advocated and the value that we advocated. And the judge should have selected one of those or some number in between, but there was no evidence on the record to suggest that it was not capable of a present value calculation or that it was worth $0. In short, you know, because this judgment is not definite and enforceable with respect to her receiving these benefits, and because the evidence was there and the judge should have gone ahead and divided this property at the time of the trial, we're asking this court to reverse the trial court, remand it back for a complete hearing on an overall division of property, and to issue a full and final division of property at that time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, Ms. Clark. I'm going to ask you to imagine that in this case there's no logger's pension, and look at that part of it first. We had approximately $570,000 worth of property that went to the wife, $178,000 worth of property that went to the husband. A roughly $200,000 difference, regardless of the loggers. So what did the judge do? He ordered an equalization payment. Happens all the time. Made it a close to 50-50 division. Actually, the wife was a little bit ahead. Made a 50-50 division of the property. That's entirely appropriate. And that's a separate issue from the loggers question.
So what if the trial court had not made any orders regarding loggers? What if the trial court had ignored loggers?
I think that would have been error, Judge.
We would be here because the trial court would have not
divided the property. Correct. There's no question that to your question earlier, the pension is vested but not matured. To my knowledge, he does not have to be working there that day. So it's clearly a marital asset. It has value. But here's the struggle that the judge was faced with at trial. You have two experts that come up with valuations that I think are $160,000 different between the two.
But neither of them was zero. I mean, he made a legal decision that was worth zero. He didn't actually, it must be to say it's zero, because there was expert testimony, as you point out, a wide range, but nothing approaching zero, and there was clearly an entitlement to money if he reached a certain age. He must. On what basis did he give it zero value?
He put a zero value because if the husband had died before he reached age 60, when he could start drawing the pension, he got nothing.
And is that not something experts can take into account in determining whether something has present value? Isn't that something you build in value of any pension? Because you don't know how long you'll live and how long you'll get it.
Well, they use actuarial tables to do that.
What requires the judge to believe any expert witness?
he's free to believe or disbelieve any testimony that he receives. I think it's a little bit of a red herring with this zero value. I think what the judge was saying is, look, I got these two highly respected CPAs using different valuation approaches, and they're that far apart. I want to be fair to these people. What's the fair thing to do?
And how is the judgment enforceable 11 years from now?
The order is very specific. At the time that he receives this money, he is to write her a check. And we all know when that's going to happen.
And can he take a lump sum payment?
It's my understanding. Incidentally, there's no evidence of that on the record one way or the other, but I have reviewed the logger's reports. I understand that he can take a two-year lump sum, which reduces his monthly amount, but he's still got the obligation to pay her the amount.
And how is she going to enforce that?
By contempt if he doesn't do it.
So are you saying that if he got a lump sum amount, he would owe her 82% of it?
No, I'm saying he owes her that monthly benefit until it no longer is paid.
But what if it came in a lump sum? What if he took a lump sum instead of a monthly benefit?
It is my understanding, Your Honor, that under the plan, taking the lump sum doesn't eliminate the monthly payments in
so,
the future.
So he,
it just
he,
reduces them.
He'd get the lump sum, and she'd only get a portion of the day, of the monthly benefit.
She'd get the marital portion as determined by the trial court.
But doesn't the marital portion, shouldn't it apply to the lump sum? Why should he get the windfall of the lump sum?
Well, I don't know that that would be a windfall. Because wouldn't he would
get
be
her...
getting a lesser monthly payment, but still have to pay her the amount that was calculated as the marital portion monthly.
What was calculated as her marital portion?
Your Honor.
And you're saying it would not apply to a lump sum distribution? Why isn't that a marital asset?
The lump sum distribution would not impact what she would receive.
Why isn't
monthly.
The lump sum money a marital asset, is my question?
I don't know. Perhaps... I suppose that it is, and you'd have to calculate.
Well, it would reduce his portion, but not hers.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. If he takes a two-year lump sum option, he still receives monthly payments, but the amount that he has to pay to her is going to be the same as what the court orders, so she gets her 50% of the marital portion regardless of that. And incidentally, there's no evidence about lump sum most in the trial court at all.
Can you address the issue raised by and addressed by the joiner court on the infeasibility of requiring spouse to sue him every month for her money if he decides not to pay her, that you're guaranteeing future friction by a couple that by definition is unable to get along?
I think that you're assuming that the parties will not comply with the court's order. The question is, if that happens...
Why set it up for failure? It's like what the joiner court said, and it came up with a mechanism, which may be good or bad, which I'd like you to address, to avoid setting up something that as a practical matter, in the average case, will not be feasible or easy to comply with or compel compliance with, without saying anything about these particular two people.
Well, Your Honor, I've done this for 37 years. Contempt is used on all kinds of issues with respect to enforcement of orders. And it's an effective, it's a difficult but effective a method to enforce the court's order. Unfortunately, with the logger's pension, I'm a little turned around here, but the folks across the street, when they set this up in 1967, made it not subject to quadros, not subject to division of benefits orders, which kind of relates to how the experts valued these things. Now, the big difference between the two experts, other than considering tax consequences, was the discount rate that they used. And Mr. Hillen used a treasury note, which is certainly justifiable in that industry. My expert used the actual returns over a period of time from the logger's account, which I would argue is the appropriate thing to do, given the fact that this is not just like an ordinary annuity. This is a plan that has special legislative treatment. It doesn't, they don't have to hire a bunch of lawyers to deal with quadros and division of benefits orders and those sorts of things. They're able to keep their administrative costs really low, and that's why they're able to produce what a great return they produced in the past. So I don't know if that answers your question or not with respect to the two different valuations, but we have issues in a divorce case all the time where there's going to be some future event that has to be enforced, and we do that through contempt, and it's not a problem.
With regard to the trial court's order, the trial court orders Mr. Landowe to pay a set sum, which it indicates is half of a marital benefit that also is a set sum, but orders that it be less applicable income taxes per month. So the payment to Mr. Landowe would be taxable as income, is that right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
How about the payment to Mrs. Landowe? Is that a division of property payment, or is it maintenance to her? Is it taxable income to her?
It is not maintenance. It is a property payment, and it is not taxable to her. That's why the court determined that it would reduce that monthly payment by the tax consequences of it, so that it would be fair. He has to pay taxes on the entire check. They're going to 1099 him.
And so how is she going to convince the tax authorities that it's not, is maintenance paid? Is income paid on maintenance, income tax paid on maintenance?
Generally, yes, Your Honor.
And so,
but this is not a maintenance payment.
This is being ordered as a property deferred
that
property
is correct.
Division.
It's property division, so it's tax-free to her.
And what is it about the order that says it's a property division? Because I'm looking at the order and I don't see anything that says this is a division of property. In fact, the court found that it had no value as a division of property.
No, it had no present value because Mr. Landowe could pass away and get nothing. That's the basis for that particular finding. But, Judge, it is a property settlement payment because it's not delineated as maintenance.
Yeah, but it's not delineated as property division, is it? It's excluded
from
the property division.
I don't believe that the trial court's required to say this is property division. If you award her the car and the house, you don't have to say that's property division. It just is obviously property division. So, in short, we have a division of property here that is equal and even. We're faced with a dilemma, the trial court is, on how to divide this pension. The court followed the leading case from this court 35 years ago in the Kushta case, and which specifically gave the court the power to fashion the type of order that it did in this particular case.
So when the court finds a certain value, the future value has an accrued benefit under the plan, and it's marital in nature. That's indicating it's property, because it says.
And actually, it's in paragraph 32 says the following property is set aside as his separate non-marital property, and that's part of it.
How's this any different than a situation where people are going through a divorce, and one of the parties has an existing tort claim that's difficult to value? Aren't those claims? Don't judges divide those in a percentage and have it paid when the money's received?
That is sometimes true, and obviously there are enforcement issues there. But we're generally going to know when a PI case settles, and if it's not paid.
What's inherently unfair about a judge dividing a speculative but a future speculative award in a ratio or an amount as opposed to being required to reduce it to present value?
There's nothing unfair about that at all. In fact, it's allowed, and the Kushta case specifically lays out a scenario just as the judge did in this particular case.
Are you aware of anything besides like tort claims or loggers? Are there other things that come up in dissolutions where the speculative nature of the value, even though everybody agrees there's value, is put off to a later time?
Probably the most typical thing, Judge, would be where a house is ordered to be sold, and the standard language used in decrees is at the earliest possible opportunity for the highest possible price. Well, what does that mean? But you don't know what it's going to sell for, and you don't know when it's going to sell. So that we get contempt cases frequently that at some point it becomes obvious that there's non-cooperation in an effort to non-comply. There are so many different things in divorce cases that depend upon a future event that the court has to have that flexibility to deal with that. And that's what Kuchta talks about, is giving the trial court flexibility to deal with these sorts of issues.
Is the wife going to have to sell the business in order to come up with the cash to make the equalization payment? She gets only 6 months, and I don't see that. I mean, most of the award was property, right? So where is the cash supposed to
come
from?
She received $550,000 worth of real estate with a $50,000 note on it. She has
is that where the flower shop is, or separate property? And the
flower
homes
shop
that are connected?
And house. I'm adding
so those
them both
have to
together,
get sold.
But they're connected by a breezeway. So there's $500,000 in equity in that real estate that she received, from which she can borrow the $200 to pay the equalization payment. That is common practice in divorce cases, where you have one person is going to get the real estate, the other person gets their equity, assuming there's enough equity in the real estate to refinance it and get the money to pay off the. But at that point, there's an equal division, absent the loggers. The only question here is whether loggers can be divided on the wait and see approach, as is allowed by Kuchta. And the joiner case that's relied upon, it's the principal case relied upon by the appellant here. The joiner case does not even address Kuchta or cite it, and it's the leading seminal case on division of marital of these types of pensions, and it's been the law for 35 years. It's Kuchta should not be changed. It is the pronouncement of this court. It's been followed by domestic practitioners for 35 years without problems. And Joyner is a little bit of an aberration.
Was Kuchta a loggers case?
Kuchta was not a loggers case, right. But Kuchta explained the various types of pensions, including a vested but non-matured pension like this one is.
If I understand correctly, if you were to lose on this and opposing counsel, we were to agree with opposing counsel's position, but the trial court valued said the present value was the $54,000 that your expert said, that would simply be divided with half of 82% of it going to the spouse and the rest going to yours. Is that the only way? So $20,000 would go to her and $30,000 to you? Everything else would remain the same?
I suppose
is that going to affect the distribution and the equalization payment? How would that affect the issue about the equalization payment?
The equalization payment would be reduced by one half.
$5,000 or $10,000.
Right, but here's the problem, Judge, and this is a statewide problem. There's 60,000 people that are affected by this loggers pension plan. A percentage of those people are getting divorces. If you rule that there has to be as Joyner did, that there has to be a valuation at the time of trial, imagine from the practitioner's perspective and the individual's what you've done. There's going to be an expert accountant over here, an expert accountant over there. That's not just this case. That's all of these loggers cases. They're going to come up with different numbers. You're going to leave the judge befuddled on what to do, and not divide it when they get it?
And you're saying right now there's usually no experts on the value of these plans?
It depends. Most 85% of these cases are resolved, and there's negotiations, and you go back and forth, and we don't get to this point. Obviously.
Your position here on appeal is different than your position in the trial court. In the trial court, you asked the court to divide it.
In the trial court, I gave the court evidence of what we believed to be its present value, but we're entirely comfortable and believe the court did exactly what it had the power to do under this court's pronouncements.
Any other questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. It would be great, you know, if these cases could be reduced to a simple math problem. That would be super. It would make things a lot easier. But that's not what the Dissolution of Marriage Act says. That's not what 452.330 says. It says not only does this have to be a fair division, but we've got to consider all these other factors before we decide who's getting what. If our legislature had wanted the court to just put all the assets to the wife here, all the assets to the husband here, add them up and say, okay, whoever comes out ahead has to pay the other person half, that's what the statute would say. And that's not what it says. It says the court has to take evidence on all of those factors so that the division of property is not necessarily equal. It might be equal, but it's got to be fair and equitable. And that's where the trial court erred here, because this entry of division of property is not fair. It is not fair because of the deferred division of the Loggers plan. It's not fair because the court ignored the expert evidence, the true value of the plan. And it's not fair because the court didn't consider the statutory factors in determining how the property was
going to be. How do you know that?
Well, actually, I think we have a pretty good sense
that the trial court wasn't required to make written findings on them. So we presume the court considered them. So what tells us the court didn't?
We can presume that the court did not consider the factor of the economic.
That's not under our standard of review.
For purposes of my argument, Your Honor, I'm sorry. What I mean is, if we look at the record, we know that what the Dissolution of Marriage Act says is that we have to consider the economic circumstances of the parties at the time the division of property is to be effectuated. Well, the Loggers plan, division of the Loggers plan is not going to take place for 9, 10, 11, 12 years in the future if it ever takes place. No one could have presented evidence of the economic circumstances of the parties at that time, so we can know with certainty the court did not consider the economic circumstances of the parties at the time of the Loggers plan, because we couldn't present evidence of that. What was presented is evidence of the circumstances now, and of course our position is that the court ignored the evidence on the record and failed to give a fair and full division of the property by entering this deferred division and by not considering those factors.
And I know you claim there was marital misconduct, but with the court not making any findings of that, is that something we can, don't we presume the court didn't find that since it wasn't in the findings?
What we're asking this court to do is remand for a full hearing on an overall division of property. And yes, the court should reconsider those factors. Because in doing any division, if you remand this and say to the court you have to do an overall division of property now, they're going to have to consider those factors again. And I would presume new evidence might be presented, or the same evidence might be presented, new expert testimony might be presented at that time.
Any other questions? Thank you. Case will be submitted.